Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Sound of the bell, we enter into this sacred space with our intention to be open to the magic of the moment. Thank you for that beautiful music to start us off. It transported me to Hawaii, where I was leading a dance workshop with children. And they played this song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, this very version, this playful version. And I was transported to seeing these children dancing around a room with their hearts on fire with the lyrics. And as I see these two little babies in the back of the room, a six-month-old and I think a four-year-old, I realize that the circle is complete. That there are no accidents on Father's Day to experience all our children, and they're all our children. This morning as I came to church, a gardenia from the garden wanted to come in, and so I picked the gardenia, one of my children from the garden. And then David Copeland came in around 8 o'clock, and he had in his arms some blue hydrangeas and a magnolia blossom, probably from one of his magnolia trees. And then half an hour later, Sylvia comes in carrying a big bouquet of gladiolas that had fallen over in the garden. And I realized on Father's Day, we're celebrating our children. The two-leggeds, the four-leggeds, the ones that come through the earth, the plant people. We were talking about the bumblebees drinking from the nectar of the flowers until they get intoxicated with the honey. The insect children. This morning, my sweet husband went out to the bird feeder because they were all waiting for breakfast, and he filled it up and they swarmed to the feeders, all the birds, at the baths, the bath bowls, and then the dog bowl filled up with water because there are children too, only to know that the robins are taking a bath in the dog's water bowl, which is not acceptable if you're a control freak. And yet, in the celebration of the one life, we learn to listen to the birds. The Zen calendar yesterday said, I am a butterfly. I am not the butterfly collector. And as I open to directly experience the butterfly in me, well then, love begins to awaken. And this Sunday, I'm going to undress the idea in love with the world. In love with the world. To fall in love with a flower. It was Emerson that said, I am a weed by the garden wall. A weed. To see, the universe in a grain of sand and eternity in a wildflower. Something is beginning to shift in consciousness, where we're beginning to see it's all the one life. The one life unfolding in its mysterious ways. And part of that life is birth, and part of that life is death. And if you're a gardener, you know both of them operate all the time. I watch the robins in the front yard harvesting the earthworms from the moss garden. They pick up the moss and they cast it aside, that beautiful velveteen moss that you cultivate. Well, the robins say, off damn moss, I'm going after the worms. And then as they eat the worms, sometimes they split the worms, and then you realize that little half a worm is making a new worm life for himself. And the garden goes on. and on and on. And we smile to the interrelationships as we coexist on planet Earth. So I invite you to open your eyes now as we enter into the playground of the unmanifest and we begin to explore a discovery of something that is so intimate that it's always happening. And it's not something that happened in the past in our bookstore. I mean, in our classroom, there's a pillow that has an embroidered saying from Emerson. And this saying says, it matters not so much what happened in the past. It doesn't matter so much what happens in the future. But what matters is what's operating within you all the time. And so when we let the past dissolve, because it's just our history, and we let the future dissolve because it's just a projection of our expectations and our dreams and our wanting, and we find ourselves in the eternal now moment, well, then we begin to observe what's operating in my consciousness. Because we know that what we carry into the world is what we're going to reap. You know, the truth is so simple, and it says the truth will set you free. It didn't say the zealous study and search for truth will set you free, Amy. No, it says the truth will set you free, and the truth's always there. So could we tap into this truth that says spirit was never born and spirit never dies? So when the fact is that when a form leaves the planet, does that mean that wasn't true? No, that means that there is an impermanent quality to form, and yet there's eternal quality to spirit. And so when we begin to play in these two realms, could we begin to explore the discovery of that invisible something, let's call it the soul, the androgynous soul, and to know ourselves as that, in this human incarnation, and to embrace the journey as it unfolds. And sometimes the journey is uncomfortable, and sometimes it's glorious and exquisitely blissful. But as someone reminded me, after the ecstasy, the laundry, the Jack Kornfield book, my little husband goes around quoting a Zen saying, you know, before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. You never stop doing the simple little ordinary things like watering your garden, picking up your dog's poop by the side of the road. Simple little things. And you know, it becomes a sacred act, a sacred practice, tending the garden. I shared with the Revealing Circle this morning that it's Father's Day today, and Trey and I are down to one pet. We used to be a menagerie of so many, and they were all our children. Anybody, pet owners out there, they're like your four-legged children. And so now we're just down to Mr. Pug, and he's got one eye with cataracts, so he's virtually blind. He can't hear. He's had a herniated disc, so he had to learn to walk again, and he more waddles and goes from side to side. Sometimes he falls over, but it's kind of cute. And yesterday, Trey and I took him down to Big Springs Park, where all the ducks are giving birth, and we're feeding the baby ducks, and it's just a wonderful time, and he loves to sit in his stroller as we go around the lake. And so when we got to the very end of this long walk around the lake, I lift him out of his stroller and place him in some shady green grass where he can waddle around and do his business. And then all of a sudden, some instinct had him shift, and he waddles across the sidewalk, and he goes over to the lake, and he falls in the lake. And I said, Trey, Pug's in the lake. And then Trey waddles over there, and he leaps into the lake. Now, the first thing the pug does is he goes under the water. He's a big pug. And he comes up, and his little head sticking above there with his one eye, and he goes into dog paddle mode, and he's heading out to the middle of the river, the middle of the lake, paddling as fast as he can. And Trey, in his panic state, happy Father's Day, and Trey said, I've seen this on documentaries, David. This is called the hero impulse that forces a mother to lift up a car and rescue her child. Or, you know, they go into a burning building to rescue something. He's literally in the middle of the lake, rescuing the pug. He scoops him up like a drowned rat, and he throws him on the shore. And then I had to fetch him out of the water, which was even a bigger challenge, because the pug was easy, the 73-year-old not so easy. But, you know, he was so proud of himself for rising to the occasion. And of course, he said I needed to tell you all that that's called the hero impulse. I said, I'll make sure I tell people that it's the hero. He said, now, I think I would draw the line if somebody were in a burning car. My hero probably wouldn't come out there. I said, it's good to know your limitations with the hero consciousness. Anyway, life will give you these moments, and I really trust in life. You know, life will give you what you need in advance of your asking. And sometimes what we need are those little moments where it rocks our world. It shakes our system. The thing that we thought we were in control of, we're not in control. Have you ever realized that you're not in control? That's the biggest addiction that the planet has. And when you realize that you're not in control, well, then what are you? We're all in a place of accepting what is and being able to navigate. You know, I talk a lot here at the Center for Spiritual Living about a shift. And it's all about having a shift out of the identity as the egoic self, the finite self that wails and suffers, and shift into this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose at the core of all life. So you're moving away from the reactive nature into this responsive, loving place that we really are. But I found it very interesting in Jeff Foster's wonderful book, The Deepest Acceptance, he talks about the shift in a different way. And I couldn't get this out of my craw because it's so relevant to what's happening in the world. And this is for you, Ari. The shift isn't about having life be sweet and wonderful as it is. The shift is go into the darkest, deepest, sickest part of life, and that's where we get to bring the love.
Well, that doesn't sound very pleasant, David.
Well, listen to what Jeff says. He said, it's fashionable these days to talk about a shift in human consciousness that is happening on our planet. And you know I'm all about that, shifting who we are. He says, but instead, I think that what we're really doing is developing a new and heightened awareness of the madness of the human mind. We're developing an awareness of the madness, the insanity of your neurotic mind and your emotional body that's tinged with subconscious thoughts that are going to subvert the whole world. It's all sick. What a shift is that? So here's how Jeff says it. He says, wars, genocide, oppression, and violence are still going on this very minute. And the world's financial system is on the brink of collapse. And some would say it's already collapsed. And the greatest superpowers are in terrible debt. Ecological disaster looms on the horizon. Look at poor Yellowstone. They've closed it down. And humans are experiencing record high levels of depression, anxiety, and stress. Now that's the reality. The world's a mess. And he's saying, instead of denying it and putting on your Pollyanna metaphysics and your Louise Hay affirmation, Serena Sage, learn to face the darkness, the pain, the depression, the anxiety, and know that that's the doorway. That's our little class, Original Freedom. He says, that's the doorway to liberation. It's not by looking for the warm fuzzies in life, getting all the good love stuff. It's about really looking at the insanity of your mind, Susan. And you know what that mind will do? It'll just go up the wrong driveway and blame the neighbor. The world has always been mad, but these days we are more aware of this madness than ever. Thank you, Jeff Foster. And he says, so begin in your own experience. If we can clearly see and understand the suffering that we create for ourselves, well, then we will also be able to see how we create suffering for others. Have you noticed how miserable you can make somebody when you hand them your pain body and you want them to share the pain with you? And then you go through life, ain't it awful? He says, first of all, be true to yourself, and then we will be able to see how we create suffering for others, for the ones that oftentimes we love, for our cities, for our countries, for our continents, and for our planet. Are you part of the solution? Are you part of the emerging new consciousness of wholeness? Or are you part of the consciousness that's identifying and believing in the problem? Because if you call the problem real, you're really intensifying the belief that it's a problem. So violence begins and ends with you, always. So recognizing this truth leads to total responsibility in the best sense of the word. This is a teaching about responsibility. And by that, I'm not wagging the finger at you. I'm saying that we have the ability to respond to the insanity of the world. You know, it's insane that we have more guns than people on this planet. That people get upset and they go into churches, they go into schools, they shoot people in cars because they can. And somehow we think it's a right. Why don't we give everybody a nuclear weapon and they can knock, you know, it's insane. So yeah, common sense. He says, I'm not offering a way out of the madness of the human mind, but rather I'm offering you a way in. Could we be willing to meet our own inner demons? Someone was, I think it was Lovely Finn, was talking about how many masks that he's worn in the past, but he doesn't wear the masks anymore. Because the mask you hide behind, but you don't need to hide behind a mask anymore. So what if we could set ourselves free of these patterns of suffering? And it's by going into it. Another way of looking at suffering is, could I find a new way to relate to the darkness, to the madness, to the insanity, to the grief, to the depression, to the anger? Could I find a new way to relate to it? And you know how we relate to it? Just like you would do if your kid's upset, you love them through it. Could we love this planet through its madness? Now, I never thought that I would end up going this route on the theme for this month, just how are we going to make our way in the world? I think with the insanity of the world right now, we're going to have to make our way by embracing the insanity. Watch those hearings and know that this is your country. Be informed when the environment is going through some real tough times. Stand at the border when the immigrants want to come across and ask, are you going to deny them refuge in the country? I saw a thing on the BBC News where they're trying to take the people from certain undesirable countries and they're sending them back to their countries. I think Rwanda was one of them. You know, we're selective. We want the immigrants, but they need to be coming from Norway and Sweden, not Rwanda or wherever it is. Could we have equanimity when it comes to our open-hearted awareness? So he goes on to say, true freedom is found not through escaping whatever uncomfortable experience that life gives you. True freedom is through diving fearlessly into the hidden depths of what life has given you. You dive right in. And in there, perhaps, we will discover all the peace, the love, and the acceptance that we were always seeking out there. So life gives you some growth experiences. And could we know that that is an opportunity? I remember Brittany's back there with her little six-month-old Dean. And I remember there was a time when she had a miscarriage and we went out to lunch. And I said, that soul will find you again. There's no limitations. And within months, Phoenix was ready to enter into this plane of action. So what if we could have the faith that the universe is in charge? I like to say this to my students because, you know, it's Father's Day and my teacher, Kennedy Schultz, he kind of lives in me. That's what your fathers do. Even when they're no longer here in form, they live in you. And Kennedy would say, put yourself in debt to the universe, not put yourself in debt to the world. So if you lose your job on the world doesn't have your good, Ari. The universe does. So could we be crazy enough to say, I surrender this life to the universe, to the one song, to the one life, to this divine possibility that wants to emerge? And do we trust in this universe, or are we going to really ask for the world's approval? Do you like me? Do you approve of me? That's begging on the world. And he would say, don't go begging on the world. You don't need the world's approval. The universe has already given you its approval by taking up residence within you. So the very first week of this four-week series, I explored the idea of calling it in, which is the first step to spiritual mind treatment, which is a recognition that there is this divine love everywhere in the universe. And just by opening to it, you're calling it within yourself. Now, if you have a hard time finding divine love, in the Sufi tradition, which is all based on the wisdom of the heart, they say image an object of deep love. It could be your beautiful baby, Dean and Phoenix over there. And then they say let the image of them dissolve, but stay in that vibration of the love that's invisible. Anybody have an animal that's no longer on the planet? I have so many. And yet, you know what I know? That their love has never left me. I think I'm kind of going crazy because we interspirit, and I had the triumvirate. It was Bert and Speckles and Humphrey. And Speckles was the first to leave, my little female. She had cancer of the mouth. And it wasn't long after that that Speckles started living her life vicariously through Bert. He started chasing the ball. He had never been interested in the ball. Not only did he chase the ball, but he pushed the ball at you, just like she would do. He never was afraid of thunderstorms. All of a sudden, he's shivering when we have thunder outside. So I got baby's thunder shirt and put it around Bert. And for the rest of his life, they kind of shared that old body. And now when Bert made his transition, now I have just the one-eyed pug. And now the pug sleeps in Bert's hole in the dining room. I swear to God, he curls up in that hole every day. Not that I'm making an assumption. And when he went into the water the other day, I just said to Trey, you know, Speckles love to chase the ball into the lake. I'm thinking maybe she jumped in his little pug body and leaped off the thing and went for a swim in the water. He loved swimming across that lake. And you know, I said, David, you're going crazy. Now you're making assumptions. You're doing all this kind of hocus pocus with your animals. But you know what? I just see it as the power of love. I see it as the mystery of belonging to the universe. And when I call in the divine imagination, and what if that's what we're here to cultivate? There is this imaginal realm within mind that is so much greater than the local mind. We'll call it the non-local mind. And it was Albert Einstein. There's a poster in the men's bathroom that says, I don't want to know what people think. I want to know what God thinks. So what if we could tune into the divine intelligence through our imagination? And we could begin to have these experiences that are so much larger than the local mind could do. Well, yeah. Are we being guided from the ancestors? Now, live in that question. Thich Nhat Hanh would have you believe that. He'd say, the ancestors live in you. That would mean our fathers and our ancestral fathers. And he says, the expectations of the ancestors live in you. Wow. So could I invite Ernest Holmes in this Sunday morning, the founder of our teaching? Could I invite so many of my teachers, including my own biological father? And you know the beautiful thing about the transmission of your parents, they do live in you, so do your teachers live in you. And that it's not just the good parts, the shadow parts also live in you. So could I embrace the shadow parts of them, knowing that they did the best they could with what they had? And you know, if you're blessed to have siblings on this planet, you share that same kind of dysfunctional relationship. I love our satsangs because I realize I'm not the only one that had a screwed up childhood. I think it goes with the territory. And you know, the most beautiful, I say this with so much love, they did the best they could with what they had. They truly did. My mother was raised in a very evangelical Christian community where you had to accept everything on blind faith. And so there was no wiggle room with mom. And my dad was a flaming liberal, went to the Unitarian Universalist Church, and he said, if anything insults your intelligence, don't believe in it. So here you have these two people from two different worlds cohabitating, and you're trying to navigate through that consciousness, knowing all the while that people are offering you their consciousness. You want a little bit of this, you want a little bit of that. And so my whole childhood, I got to choose, am I going to go the narrow way, or am I going to go the more progressive, open-minded way? And it was Dr. Ernest Holmes that finally spoke to my soul, where he said, we embrace all teachings and we exclude none. And he says, we need to be open at the top so that we can have a more expanded discovery of what life is all about. In the John Burney book, I read ahead for next week's lesson, and the next satsang that he talks about is about discovery. And in the very first page of The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes says, you cannot live basically a clueless life. In every moment, the universe is trying to wake you up. He says, but you have to make the discovery for yourself. And so this chapter, this next satsang in John Burney's book, Ordinary Freedom, is about that discovery. And he says that discovery is happening in every moment. And he says, in order to have that discovery of the one life that you are, you have to have the beginner's mind. You can't have the mind of the authority who's got all the answers. You've got to be teachable and empty like my little brother Terry over there. You've got to have that kind of innocent childlike mind so that even an octopus can speak to you and fungi can speak to you, because it's all the universe and all its diversity that's waking up in you, because it's all you. Now, is that kind of fun? I think that that's the best game in town. You know, we show up at our satsangs, and what's so magical about all of this is it's an energetic, alchemical thing. In John Burney's book, and it's all a series of satsangs, he says, when you sit in the energy of the Sangha, he says, you're sitting in that vibrational field of an emergent consciousness that we all experience at some degree. And the one thing that this truth cannot abide is the ignorance of conclusions and belief systems. In fact, in truth, there are no belief systems. So he said, what if all your beliefs that you've held so sacrosanct begin to just dissolve? Well, then what's left after the beliefs go? Well, I guess you're free then. You're free to be and discover who you are. What if the world doesn't approve of it, Ari? Well, are you seeking the world's approval? Are you open to the universe? And she goes, yeah. So I'm opening to this mysterious divine something that is helping me navigate through these difficult times in our world, and that's what we need. Not someone who denies it, but someone who can face the darkest, saddest, most painful, angry moments that life gives us. Jeff Foster, one of my heroes, this is his latest book, and it's called Falling in Love with Where You Are. No matter where you are, no matter what you're going through, to fall in love with that place. You know, whatever is, just love it. And, you know, we only have the moment. Listen to how he does a little prayer in here at the end. It's really simple, and I'm going to use this as kind of an inspiration to go to a final meditation. He says, cherish your doubts. They are the seeds of the mystery itself. Now, it's so funny. We had James Golden come here, and he said, one of the greatest mistakes that we can have is doubt. And I thought, you know, that's that religious science fundamentalism. You don't want to have doubt because doubt's the faith in a limited idea. Jeff Foster says just the opposite. This is the shift. He says, no, cherish the doubts. So when doubt arises, Barbara, you can say, oh, there's some doubt. Maybe this isn't. Should I have moved to Meridianville? Well, maybe I should have stayed in Florence. He says, cherish the doubts. They're the seeds of the mystery with the big M. You know, have you doubted relationships that you've been in? Maybe it wasn't meant to be. Have you doubted the job that you were in? Well, maybe that wasn't the job I was in. Could you cherish those doubts? Am I really on the right path with the pug? He says, embrace your sadness. And when you do, you'll find that great joy lies within. You know, when someone is grieving, and I love to use this metaphor, and you experience this deep, deep sadness, every time I think of Bert or Speck, yes, there's some sadness, but there's also that overwhelming oceanic love that is still there. And I find myself on Sunday mornings coming into the classroom and seeing the old teddy bear that I've called Bert. And I'll just pick up his big head and I'll hold it in my arms. And in a strange sort of vicarious way, I'm holding Bert's head at the end. And I told him, even at the end, I said, you know, Bert, I'll be here to hold your paw right up until the end. And when I won't, Jody will be there. And sure enough, there she was holding his paw at his head. And so that teddy bear helps me embrace the sadness. Embrace your sadness, he says, because a great joy lies right in the midst of it. This is kind of counterintuitive, isn't it? He says, turn to face your fears. And at their core lies peace beyond all words. So instead of running away from what you fear, face the fear. Huh. What is fear? The acronym for fear is forgetting that everything is really all right. So then when fear arises in your little boy, could we face the fear? I used to be afraid that there were demons under the bed. And I could remember my mother, she'd get on her knees and we'd look under the bed and realize that there aren't demons under the bed. I don't know where I got that idea that they were waiting there to catch me, but you know, little kids think that way. He says, celebrate your boredom. Your boredom is radically alive. When someone says to me, oh, I'm so bored, and I say, well, you know, there really is no such thing as boredom. They're only boring people. Oh, they don't like it when I say that. So he says, what? Celebrate your boredom. It's radically alive. Is it boring to go and tend the garden, to pull out the weeds, to move the sprinkler around, to fill up the bird feeder, to carry the pug up and down, to make his lunch, to chop up it? Is it boring? Or is it just a mindful practice of service? So he goes on to say, hold your grief and let it break your heart wide open. Let your grief break your heart wide open. You know, Jody is grieving the death of a beautiful dog. And when she shared this morning, I felt my own sacred grief coming up. And it's not her grief or my grief. It's just the grief. I wear this uniform. Trey calls it my uniform now, out of reverence for the Ukrainian people and their spirit of resilience to standing up to oppression and finding that collective commitment among each other to fight for something that they care about. Let's call it democracy. And, you know, we may get to that place in our own country. We have to fight for democracy. It's crazy that we should even have to have this conversation, but it is. So hold your grief and let it break your heart wide open and befriend your anger. Oh, I used to be so afraid of anger because I grew up in a household. My father was a rageaholic and my mother was passive aggressive. So she would go into the silent thing. He would go into the rage thing and my siblings would mirror the rage. And I, being the withdrawing one, I would hide in the basement where I could escape these crazy, angry parents. Well, now he's saying the opposite. He says, feel the anger.
Well, befriend it, he says. Know it intimately as the life power that burns the sun.
It's the life power, the anger. Thich Nhat Hanh, one of my great teachers, used to say when these shadow parts, he'd say, oh, there you are, my little anger. Oh, there you are, my little fear. Oh, there you are, my deep abiding grief. Oh, there you are, my boredom or my curiosity. There you are, my anxiety. And when they're embraced, when they're loved, that's the shift. Instead of denied and putting on Louise Hay and saying, affirm this and deny that. No, no, no. Let's all that stuff that we've denied come down and integrate within our being. Then you're making the conscious, unconscious, conscious. And you're integrating all those exiled parts of yourself. And then when the suffering of the planet comes out here, you've mastered it within yourself. Well, then when Mary comes and she's anxious, you can help Mary embrace her own anxiety. That's how it works. He says, acknowledge your pain. It is the body's plea for your own kind attention. Serena called me when she's in pain and she's got a mental, emotional stuff going on. And all I do is give it my attention, my loving attention. And I speak about the highest good unfolding. When you put your attention, your intention for the highest good, not what I want, not how I want to fix the world. I want to get even with certain people that I might feel have wronged me. What if I could surrender to the highest intention that's love's intention? Well, what would love do here? Well, love certainly wouldn't try to control it or manipulate it or make it into some idea that I think it should be. Love would have you surrender the need to be in control at all. And then, you know, my beloved friends are having some marital challenges, and I shared with this lovely lady in my wedding ceremonies. I always use this beautiful phrase by Ernest Holmes that has become a way of life. You talk about being in love with the world. Ernest Holmes says, divine love brings together and maintains together those who belong together. And now when you really take that to the depths of your own being as the truth, well then divine love's in charge. Divine love brought Michael and I together. I didn't do it. No mating service or dating service brought us together. It was divine love. Brittany and Kenny were in satsang for years, and she was married to another man. But divine love brought them together, and it's maintaining them together because they belong together. So they could create these beautiful extensions of their own love. He says, all feelings are deeply intelligent. So Ari, when you have those incredible, wonderful feelings, they're intelligent feelings. Don't try to control them. Wow. You mean to feel passionate about rescuing animals in Brazil is okay, Serena? Yeah, if you feel that deeply about it. My niece went to Mexico and dating the guy, the relationship that didn't work out. Anybody have those? But they went to Mexico together and they found a stray animal that became their child. So they moved back to San Francisco. They managed to get this dog out of Mexico. They loved the dog, but the relationship didn't last. So now they have what they call dog custody. He spends time with her. He spends time with him because the love they had with the dog was real. Theirs not so much. But I'm just saying, all feelings are deeply intelligent. So get out of the way. Get out of the way of those feelings and let them do their sacred universal work. Whatever they might be, let them do their universal work. So to be in love with the world is to know that the world is filled with suffering. It's filled with madness. It's filled with confusion and anxiety and fear and anger. Could we be the part that loves all of that? To love it on the outside, to love it on the inside. I wrote down here, give them your gentle attention, whatever it is that's arising. Give them your curious heart. What is it trying to show me? When life gives you these growth opportunities, give them your loving soul. We're this androgynous soul. So when those exiled parts that we've masked are coming up to be integrated into our experience, we get to love those, you know, parts of ourselves that the world might have said were flawed. You know, and I'd love it in the indigenous spirituality, they would make like a tapestry and they would always leave a flaw in the tapestry. And in the indigenous culture, they said, we leave the flaw in the tapestry so the soul can escape through the flaw. So playing this game, what if we need those divine flaws for our soul to escape and to be free? Did you hear that, Ari? That's directly for you. Your flaws are sacred. He says, could we be in love with the sweet ache of life? It was Mark Nepo who nearly died from cancer twice. And he talks about to experience the sweet ache of being alive, both of its pain, because there's going to be sadness, there's going to be grief, we're going to lose forms in this life, but there's also going to be so much emergence, so much spontaneity. I love when Anastasia brought her beautiful son Seth to our satsang last week, and I hadn't seen him in quite a while, and his whole life is flowering in ways, and he was so on fire with enthusiasm about the directions that his life is taking. He's not in control. No, he's just doing a dance and leaping into it full-heartedly, and guess what? He's working at Publix for $13 an hour. He is the proudest little 15-year-old kid I've seen on the planet. I said, how are your critters? Oh, he loves his critters. He said, isn't it cool? I've got a lizard and snakes and God knows what else. I said, that's because you've got a great mom out there. And you can see how that's where love is in charge. Not the controlling adult. Yes, we need a controlling adult, especially when they don't clean their bathroom. But there's this also this other loving place that lets them emerge in their own playful sort of way. I'm going to invite our musicians up here. And I'm going to ask Jody to ring the bell. And as I take you into a meditation, they're going to lead us into a closing song. And then we'll stand in a circle and we will join in the Father's Day song, We Are One, One Life Unfolding. So if my beloved Jody will ring the mindfulness bell. Thank you, my beloved. And we enter into that question, how are we going to make our way in the world? And we start by calling in the presence, calling in this open-hearted awareness, calling in the peace that passes all understanding, calling in the deepest acceptance of every moment, knowing that this is the life that the universe has given us, so we rejoice and are glad in it. We call in that abiding appreciation for the sound of a child. Oh, there's hope in the universe. And then we enter into the sacred moment. We inherit the sacred moment as if this is all we've been given, this breath, the breath within the breath. And the gift that that does, that stops us from projecting into the future or clinging on to the past, but we literally open to the totality of possibilities of now. And you hear Ram Dass saying, be here now. All you have is the sacred moment. And then you hear Krishnamurti saying, in oneself lies the whole world. We're not separate. And if you know how to look within and without, then the door is there and the key is in your hand. Huh. But no one gives you the key or the door to open except yourself. And so we take responsibility for opening the awakened heart within ourselves. And that awakened presence smiles. And we wake deeply within and we discover that we all share this same smile of the one life, the one love. And then we waken out into the world, seeing it as our own self, mirrored back to us. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God, because the divine presence is looking through my eyes, seeing itself reflected everywhere. And so finally, we enter into that vibration of love. A love that accepts all things, bears all things, endures all things. A divine love that brings together and maintains together those who belong together. And so we surrender to that divine love that brought that stray dog in Mexico to a young couple, not so that their relationship could flourish into the future, but so that that beautiful soul could find an escape route to have a mommy and a daddy on Father's Day who can share the love. Not grasp at it, not saying it's mine versus yours, but it's the one love that we share. And truly, it's a wonderful world. I'm going to invite our musicians to share this closing song with us, and I invite you to take the lyrics into your heart and feel them working their alchemy on your soul.
Other side, rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Who says that every wish would be heard and answered when wished on a morning star? Somebody thought of that, and someone believed it. Look what has come so far. What's so amazing that keeps us stargazing? What do we think we might see? Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. All of us under its spell know that it's probably magic. Have you been half asleep? Have you heard voices? I've heard them calling my name. Is this the sweet sound that called the young sailor? The voice might be one and the same. I've heard it too many times to ignore it. It's something that I'm supposed to be. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers.
Rainbow connection to the lovers, the dreamers, and the one life unfolding in its unique diversity. I invite you all now to come and stand in a circle, and on this Father's Day, we'll join in that beautiful chant, the circle chant about oneness. Thank you guys for bringing the music on Father's Day.
Overflowing with love, I am overflowing. for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You create a brand new